And welcome back. I'm your host, Tuesday Miles.
And I'm Angela Thomas.
And real quickly, Angela, we did have that our guest from our virtual auditorium was talking in regarding about the loss of a miscarriage. And she was saying real quickly, and we'll answer this real quickly, we'll bring our guest on it. Ms. Sweetcan, I really believe the fact is that, you know, just because sometimes, like we say, the death of our body does not mean the death of our spirit. And I do believe the fact is that you were seeing maybe a, you know, the essence of the miscarriage that you have. My belief system on this is, you know, not to be cut and dry, but I do believe the fact is that maybe that the spirit of this, you know, has not been assigned to this baby as of yet because it was such an early miscarriage. But the fact is that we have to get on with our first guest, but I really don't want to cut you off there. And you can email us also, too, or we can email with you if you'd like to at portaltalkradioaol.com, and that way we can continue with the conversation with each with you. Okay, Ms. Wheaton, that would be, we would more than happy on that to continue with answering your question and helping you with the with your question on that. Okay, sweetie? And she says, thank you, you're going to help, and you're welcome. On that note, Angela, let's bring our guest on.
Well, today we have the artist, author, psychic, physician, and parapsychologist, Pamela Heath. Welcome to the show, Pamela.
Well, thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you for coming and joining us. Okay, you know, we didn't name all of them.
We were talking earlier, Pamela, about you and all of the things that you're involved in, and we wonder how in the world that you're able to keep up with your calendar.
I alternate, I guess, what my interests are. You know, for example, right now I have an oil painting sitting on my easel that's been there a while because I'm working on rewriting what was my first book, The TK Zone, which is actually getting a new title as well as getting expanded and revised. So I just sort of have to sort of alternate what I'm focusing on in my free time. But I do enjoy a lot of different things.
Angela, let's give her Pamela's website out so that way our viewers can actually go in and look what we're talking about.
Yes. Pamela's website is PamelaHeath.com. And there's a tremendous amount of information on there. Pamela, let me ask you. I have read, or almost read, all of your suicide, what really happens mm-hmm. in the afterlife. What started your journey in writing this book?
It actually started when I was a graduate student in parapsychology, and the head of my program was John Klimo, who is the world's greatest expert on channeling. And anyone who's been to grad school knows you spend a lot of time in the office listening to your advisor talk, you know, and they just go on and on and on. You sit there and you listen politely. And one of the things he told me about was an experience he had where he was asked to put together some information about the channeled messages of suicides for a woman who was thinking of committing suicide, but she kind of wanted to know what she was getting into. And he gathered together about 20 pages worth of material, which made it pretty clear that it's not a real good idea. It's not like you burn in hell forever, but it's just not a real smart idea. You aren't going to get what you want, so it's just don't do it. Don't go there. And I kept thinking, what a great book, you know, and I was going like, John, you should write this book. John, you should do this book. 10 years passed.
Wow,
pretty close to it. And we still didn't do the book. And I'm like, this book really has to be written. There's nothing out there that gathers this information together in one place. And there's a lot more information than people would think on it. So I started doing the book and sort of dragged John in with me. And I went through his entire collection of channeled material in his library, which is many hundreds of books. And I also did an internet search for other material that he didn't have.
Right.
And I ended up reading about 500 or so books and journals and magazines and things like that that had channeled material, looking for things that had information about suicide in them. And about a fourth of them did. So it ended up being about approximately 125 sources. And then I decided, being the complete insane person I am, that we should really make sure that we could sort of have some kind of proof that this was meaningful information and not just coming from channeled sources. So we also looked at past life regression, hypnotherapy sessions, and information that came from people who weren't mediums in dreams, and reincarnation research, and just about everything we could think of to try and get a sense of whether this material that was coming from channel sources had any kind of validity to it at all. And there was a lot of consistency, which I thought was really incredible.
Do you think a person that has ghost or reincarnation, let's say a person who is suicide comes back for with reincarnation, carries with them the pain that they brought with them on suicide into the reincarnation?
Yeah, it depends. You know, there's a great book, by the way, on reincarnation for those who are wondering whether to believe in it or not, called 20 Cases Suggestive of Reincarnation by Ian Stevenson. And some of his patients had memories of suicide and even had, like, birthmarks related to how they died. The big risk in terms of reincarnation is that people who have committed suicide in previous lives seem to have a higher tendency to committing suicide in this life than people who never committed suicide in an earlier life. So it's sort of it's not a huge trend, but it's a little bit disturbing.
Well, I can imagine. Well, I know that one of the biggest questions out there, Pamela, is what is it like in the afterlife?
Well, what's sort of interesting about the suicide book is that it's clear that they don't have that different of an experience from everybody else who died. Just that in the sense that they have the same transitions, they have an adjustment phase, they have a period when they're doing spiritual work, and then if you believe in reincarnation, there seems to be a lot of reports that you spend some time preparing for your next life. And the big difference between suicides and people who die by other means is that each of these phases seem to be just a little bit more difficult for them. They have a little more confusion in the transition. They have more trouble recognizing that there are people there to help them. But the basic phases at each stage are the same as what everyone goes through. So it sort of has a certain amount of usefulness for everybody, even if your life hasn't been touched by suicide.
So now in your book, you spoke about those who have, you know, passed through means of suicide do begin their new world on a lower astral plane. Can you explain that a little bit more to us?
I'm not sure if it's so much that they begin on a lower astral plane as they get stuck there more. And it appears to be that a lot of them don't realize they've succeeded at killing themselves, and they keep trying to kill themselves over and over and over. Mm. And you can also see problems related to their mood or their state of mind at the time they killed themselves. In other words, depression or drug use or alcohol can all add to this confusion. And what's really interesting about the afterlife is that, you know, even us in physical bodies only tend to perceive what we expect to perceive in the world around us. So if you expect people to treat you badly, you know, and you walk around with a chip on your shoulder, you know, you're going to perceive people as treating you badly, whether it really is happening or not. This becomes even worse of a problem in the afterlife, in that you don't have physical eyes to see or a physical body that can be touched by others. So you tend to only perceive that which you expect to be there. If you expect yourself to still be alive and you refuse to see those who are spirit helpers trying to, you know, get through to you and explain that you're dead, that's a problem. They have no way to really get through to you. And that's where physical, you know, living mediums can sometimes be helpful. And I have done this, where you go and you tell a person, you explain to them, look, you're dead now. You know, look around. There are spirit helpers in the afterlife who are there to help you. You know, listen for them. You know, look for them. They're there.
Right.
So that's got to be an incredible experience, Pamela, to be able to communicate with those who have passed on, to let them know, listen, you did indeed succeed, and you are now dead. So that really, you become a therapist in a way to them.
Oh, yes. Yeah, but you do that with people no matter how they crossed over, how they died. I do work both somewhat in terms of therapy and counseling, for everybody, but also sometimes I do work as a doctor, and that can be interesting too. If they believe that they have a broken bone, because they had one when they died,
mm-hmm.
then in the afterlife they still carry that image of that wound with them. And I'll like have to say, okay, I'm a doctor, I'm going to heal you now. And,
right.
and send them energy, and it's like, okay, you're well now, it's gone.
Well, you know, Pamela, you had said something about those who refuse to believe that they are dead.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, it's on page 133, in case you have your own book in front of you.
I have the draft thing. Yeah.
And you said that it's very important for those to recognize that they are dead. It's almost like a passport to the new world. So
well,
with that being said,
yeah.
They have to recognize that they truly are dead in order for them to go up in the next level that they need to be on. Is that correct?
Well, they need to realize they're dead in order to recognize other dead, you know, which is to say the spirits who are there to greet them and help them and explain what's going to happen next and how do we move through this and help them to advance.
Right.
And sometimes the greeters will go to great lengths to try to get recognized. I think one of the more amusing things I studied was both with suicide bombers and even with fundamentalist Christians, if they're expecting, that person who dies is expecting, by golly, they're going to see a guardian angel, you know, with wings and a harp, then the spirit guides will appear to them that way because that's the only way they'll be accepted. And so they will sort of match your self-fulfilling prophecy to a certain extent, at least initially, just to get you to recognize them. And then once you recognize them, then they can start easing you into the reality of things in the afterlife. But I tell you, people who have the hardest time are the skeptics. Those guys have the hardest time when they die.
Oh, absolutely. On it. So, I mean, considering the fact is that, you know, majority of people do the suicide because, you know, and this is just under the individual suicide, that, you know, the fact that their pain is so great, the fact is that's what they're trying to escape, is the pain that they feel here on Earth, not understanding that that pain is going to continue with them
mm-hmm.
on the other side, you know, that we have certain, you know, I mean, certain things that they can do for healing here. Is what is it that they can do for themselves over on the other side for healing?
There are several things that are done. You know, one of the commonest actually is sleep. They'll actually sort of put you in this little hospital-like setting and let you just sort of sleep for a while. And then when you wake up, they'll sort of check and see how you're doing. And if you're, like, freak out, then they'll let you go back to sleep. They also have centers where they apparently will give you energy, certain levels of energy. They'll also try to create safe situations where you can start to look at your life or look at what's going on. But they may do this in very limited ways. Like with the suicide bombers, they apparently really separate those people a lot from each other. Although they'll sometimes put them in groups if one of them is starting to realize so that the others can start to realize, too, that they're dead and what's going on.
So now, Pamela, you know, there's three different types of suicide that you address in your book, and that is the traditional suicide,
mm-hmm.
you know, one's own hand going, you know, deliberately,
in a healthy body.
You know, doing the act, and secondly, then the assisted suicide, and then thirdly, you speak about those such as suicide bombers and terrorists. Can you explain to our listening audience, is there indeed a different experience that all three of these categories go through on the other side?
Yeah, I would say the greatest difference is with assisted suicides. If you're taking the life of a body with a terminal illness, and I want to emphasize that, terminal illness, not just, gee, I am in a lot of physical pain, I hate being here, you know, I want to opt out, but I've got cancer, I've only got, you know, a short period of time to live, and maybe I don't want my family to be totally financially drained and to continue to suffer, you know, for this short period of time I'm going to save. Those people have a totally different experience. They don't tend to have regrets, and there doesn't seem to be the stigma to it. However, I would have to say that even so, the spirit guides recommend that you not make this decision lightly, that you think about not only its effect on you, but its effect on the people around you, and you talk about it to the people around you, and you make sure they're okay with it. Because one of the things you start to realize is you are still aware of people's feelings, or the people who are still alive. You're aware of their feelings even after you've crossed over. So if they're really upset and sad and crying and can't deal with it, you're going to be getting hit with that emotion and that feeling, and it's going to make it harder for you. So if you can make sure everybody's on the same page and comfortable with it, and you've explored other options, and you know this is feels like the right thing for you to do, it's been well thought out, then they say there's no real problem with it from their viewpoint.
You know, and unfortunately, you know, today that we don't have that as a legal thing to do.
Correct.
By assisted suicide anyways. I mean, it's looked upon as being assisting somebody in murdering them. I have to say, though, Pamela, you know, I think that in some circumstances that people might need to have the choice of having that happen to them.
Well, I suspect we're gradually moving in that direction, but it's not going to be fast. And just speaking as a doctor, I'm not comfortable with that. I've had patients who came for surgeries and said, I don't want you to wake me up afterwards.
Wow.
And I said, you know, let me die. I'm not comfortable with that. My feeling is, you know, if I'm putting you to sleep, I'm going to wake you up again. At least do my best, you know. If it's a trauma, I may not have a choice. But it's something I think a lot of doctors aren't comfortable with. And that's where we're going to have to come to terms with it. But there certainly are countries where it's become legalized. And I guess the thing that's sort of interesting to me is when we were doing this book, I tried as hard as possible to draw from as many different cultures and eras as possible so we could try and get to the truth of the matter, you know, by what everybody said that was the same as opposed to the things that were different depending on what culture it came from, you know, so to try and sort of eliminate the cultural value of things. And I have to say, I was pretty surprised that although certainly there are some that say assisted suicide is bad, there are a number of them that say, hey, this, you know, the spirit realm doesn't look at this the same way as people, you know, who are living right now.
So what can you say to those listening, Pamela, who have been left behind as loved ones of one that is now deceased? What can you say to them about their loved ones' experiences when it comes to their own religious beliefs? Because many, especially within the Christian realm, Catholic, Christian, whatever the case may be, that this is a tremendous sin, and certainly just the tremendous sin places a burden, not only because of the loss, but a burden on them thinking that my loved one has committed one of the huge mortal sins out there. What can you say to an individual or family that is carrying around this burden?
Okay. Well, two things. First of all, there's an entire chapter just devoted to messages to those left behind, which emphasize there's still a love, there's still a connection, and that they benefit from prayer by those left behind. So prayer is a good thing, you know, regardless. And it doesn't matter how you pray, it seems to be that sort of sending good wishes to those on the other side gets through and is appreciated. The other thing is they tell us that none of us have it quite right. And even I, you know, as much as I've studied this, I recognize that I don't really know what goes on the other side. I mean, that's why we have a question mark at the end of our title.
Right.
You know, this is our best guess. But I'm not assuming it's chiseled in stone. And I think all of us would be prudent to sort of take a step back from assuming we're completely right and have a little bit of an open mind that, gee, we think this is how it is, but we're not sure. It may not be quite like that. And that flexibility not only helps us dealing with those who have passed before us, but then when we ultimately make that crossing ourselves, there's a lot of reports that say it makes our experience a better and easier one.
So as one that has done the research and has been involved in mediumship and channeling, et cetera, mm-hmm. has the message come through that there is indeed a heaven or a hell or purgatory or paradise? What are others on the other side saying about their experience?
Well, depending on the channel you're talking to, the medium you're talking to, there seem to be multiple layers, which people will describe as having different levels of vibration, which ultimately get closer and closer and closer to the source, which is all, whatever name you want to give that source, whether it be God or the universe or the all or whatever. And the lowest levels are the ones closest to the earth plane, and they're a heavier vibration. Those are the ones we find easiest to contact and that have the easiest time contacting us because of that vibration level being so close. What happens to us in the afterlife is, to a certain extent, ultimately what we create of it, both in the sense of, are we willing to be open to what's really there, or are we going to create this unpleasant world around us? If you ever saw that movie, What Dreams May Come, there was that woman who committed suicide, and she was in this really horrible place. And it was basically a place of her own imagining that she had self-created.
Right.
So people certainly do create their own hell. They can, to a certain extent, create their own heaven. All of these are within limitation. And there are spirits over there who are dedicated to trying to help us make the best of ourselves. So no matter where you are, there are people there to try to help you move up, shall we say, in the world.
I have to say this, Bianca. I mean, is she psychic or what? Because what you just brought up, the Virtual Auditorium is sitting here, been texting about the movie that you just mentioned.
Yeah, I am psychic, though, but
you know, and
it's a common movie.
Real quickly, though, Ashburn is asking in the Virtual Auditorium, which is something you just talked about. In Mrs. Heath's experience, is there a place similar to what we perceive hell to be?
You know, there are self-created hells, and of course, if you read material from the 1700s, they definitely believe there's not only a hell, but there's multiple hells. But I really think it's like life itself in a way, and that we do tend to create heavens and hells for ourselves even while we're alive.
Right.
All of that becomes exaggerated in the afterlife, which is part of why they recommend us to work on our baggage and start to create better lives for ourselves while alive, because it's easier to do it while you're alive than it is after you've died.
There you go.
Think of this as a good way, time to practice.
Absolutely, on that. 72 virgins?
No, they don't get their virgin. I don't think too many people are going to be shocked by that one. I do think it's funny, though, that some guides will state quite clearly that they will greet these guys as virgins, just to get them to cross over, because they won't believe they've died if there's not a holy man there or a virgin there or whatever.
Ooh, okay.
So they will appear in that guise just to get those people unstuck enough that they can move them to where they need to be to start dealing with stuff.
I didn't mean, as far as to be rude to anybody, but I did make a comment earlier about if you can find 72 virgins still left at that time that's going to be in spirit crossing over, you're going to be lucky.
I have to admit, I saw a cartoon once which had 72 nuns, you know, dressed all with rifles getting ready to shoot.
Oh.
But that doesn't happen either.
You said something about the belief system. The fact is, you know, and I feel this way too. We're given free will, living here as, you know, in our human bodies. Mm-hmm. You know, what's going to take away, and we're given free will in our belief system, what's going to take that away when we reach the other side? It doesn't seem that it would. It seems that's really, I mean, and I do believe, I agree on everything that you're saying there, Pamela. The fact is our free will is going to continue with us.
Yeah, there's free will. It's actually interesting. The last third of the book, which is on the suicide bombers, has, to me, some of the most interesting channeled material, because we talked a lot to spirit guides, and the spirit guides, at least one of the spirit guides we talked to, felt like he was really advanced. And I just felt like I was getting great sort of Zen stories from him.
Right.
That the more you read them, the more you got out of it. And they talk a lot about what they call unfoldment, which is sort of letting go of your limited worldview and isolated stories. And it's sort of the purpose of life itself is this unfoldment, spiritual unfoldment. And it continues in the afterlife. But But I guess one of the things they say is don't be too tightly wrapped up in your beliefs. That if you have a certain amount of openness, not only does it make life flow easier for you, but it makes a huge difference in how fast you can progress in the afterlife. Because when you look at fundamentalists, especially the suicide bombers, you're talking about people who may take, you know, hundreds or thousands of years to go through their life review and self-judgment because they're so fixed on these ideas and can't let go of them that they're not going to be able to see other viewpoints as they're going to be able to advance spiritually.
Oh, and there's that word have to on there.
Yeah, because you're stuck there. I mean, they were saying, I guess there's some channeled material about Nazis in World War II who were committing horrendous crimes. Apparently, some of those guys are going to be sleeping for like 1,000 years. I mean, it's going to take a very long time for some people to be able to progress. And you do have to deal, there are consequences. I guess that's a phrase I like to use. There are consequences to our choices. And one of the messages that came through very clearly is we need to be very thoughtful in how we deal with other people because there are consequences. And anytime you harm others, you basically are going in the life review to walk through life in their shoes. You're going to feel firsthand what happened to them when you did what you did. Okay? Now, if you do nice things for other people, that can be a very good thing, you know, that you enjoy experiencing. But if you hurt somebody, you've got to not only experience how you hurt them, but how that hurt rippled out and affected everybody who knew them in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're talking about, you know, killing a lot of people, that's a lot of stuff to go through.
So are we going to call that karma?
You know, they sort of differ in terms of whether they want to use, you know, talk about karma. They like to talk about the word consequences, you know, or they'll say some choices are more enlightened than others, but they don't like to use terms like right or wrong. They'll say enlightened or unenlightened. It's sort of an interesting distinction.
Angela, didn't you have a question more about that, about the karma with that?
Well, you know, certainly, you know, I do believe what comes around goes around.
Yeah. Yeah.
And certainly that there's consequences.
Yeah.
But how does karma play in our lives, you know, here on this earth plane versus when we've passed? Are we just taking the karma with us, or does karma happen to us once we've passed?
Well, you see, my belief is going to be different from many people's. I believe karma is a matter of choice. And that we choose to want to owe others or to be owed debts. Because a lot, if you read Meher Baba and some of the enlightened spiritual masters, they do talk about karma as a choice, that any of us can step off the wheel of reincarnation at any time. The trick is you have to let go of everything. You have to let go not only of feeling guilty for what you've done of others, which is easy for many people to feel, but also the fact that you want others to owe you.
Exactly.
You have to let go of all of it. Now, any of us at any time can do this, but it's not as easy as it sounds.
So let's talk about regrets.
Mm-hmm.
What are those on the other side, you know, saying? Do they regret what has happened? For taking their own lives or participating in a mass murder or suicide?
Well, we saw three different responses to that. The traditional suicides had many, many regrets. In fact, almost all of them at some point in their development, you know, or the afterlife, had regrets. And it might be regret for how their body was found by a brother or a sister, or it might regret for how it affected people that they knew. There were all kinds of different regrets. We've got a whole chapter devoted to their regrets. Assisted suicides really had no regrets. You know, people who, at least who came back and channeled messages, basically were saying, no, you know, I thought about this a lot, you know, and I you know, made a careful decision. I take that back. There were one or two that had regrets that looked back on their life and said, oh, gee, I was supposed to get something out of this suffering. I was supposed to learn from this. And
right.
somebody else owed me from another lifetime, and this was going to be their way of paying it off. And I didn't let them do it. So there were a few regrets here, but very few. The suicide bombers were, by and large, very early in their spiritual development and their, you know, progress. Okay? And in fact, the spirit guides were really funny because they made a big point of this, of you have to recognize where these people are in terms of their level of development. They aren't very far along. If we're talking about people that may take thousands of years to get through their life review, and we're talking 10 or 20 years ago, they haven't scratched the surface.
Wow.
So those guys mostly didn't have regrets. And I couldn't resist asking one question, because we did do some interviews of them through a different medium, where I was asking the questions, and I was tuned in both to the spirit guide that she was getting the answers from, and I was listening to what she said, the medium said.
Now, is regrets the same as remorse?
Not always.
Okay.
Not always. But anyway, so what seemed to be the case is I wanted to know, you know, well, what do you think? These people told you were going to get all these virgins and you were going to be in paradise at the right-hand side of God, and, you know, were they lying to you? And all of the suicide bombers would admit to was, it's not what we expected. But they were mostly not in a place of regret yet. There had to be at least one that was regretful, though, because apparently he met with somebody he had killed and agreed to reincarnate in another lifetime as her brother and was going to help her raise her children, and that was going to be how he paid his debt to her.
Ooh, so that sounds very Gandhi, doesn't it?
There had to have been some regret there, but by and large, you know, you weren't going to see them admit much, but they were very early in their development. They hadn't gone very far.
Let me ask this real quick on this. The term earthbound,
mm-hmm.
you know, being that we're just going to use it as a term, earthbound spirit,
yeah.
you know, on it. You know, I had an experience where I had, well, I'm going to call him an earthbound, in my
mm-hmm.
home,
mm-hmm.
and which he had hung himself,
mm.
Hung around for 3 years, and finally, you know, after driving me absolutely nuts being here, all he wanted to do
yeah.
is for me to get a message to his father that it was not his fault, that he was in charge of his own suicide.
Oh, right.
Nothing
right.
to do with his father. But, you know, and the fact is that I couldn't believe how much information this spirit gave me, and I actually did get a hold of his father. I actually was able to get the phone number, where they lived, where he was buried at, where he killed himself, bring all that information to the family. I mean, it took me 3 times to call them because I thought they were going to think I was absolutely nuts.
Yeah.
But it stopped him from constantly feeling that he caused his son to kill himself.
Yeah, and that's an important point that a lot of suicides do channel back, is they don't want those left behind to grieve for them or feel guilty. It's a very common message because each of us is responsible for our own choices. You know, ultimately, you know, others may or may not contribute to the choices we make, but ultimately we're the ones responsible. And again, it just goes back to this thing of we need to be very thoughtful in what choices we make when we're alive.
How easy is it to be thoughtful? I mean, it's just such an easy thing to do.
Well, you know, I'll argue with you on this a little bit because, I think with many suicides, they're in so much pain.
Yeah.
And they're suffering so much emotionally. And a lot of these people, when they actually commit suicide, they aren't necessarily completely in a normal state of mind. Many of them may be on alcohol or drugs or in very strong emotional, you know, whether angry or sad, whatever, it's incredible amount of emotion, which sort of puts you in a clouded sort of mental state to a certain extent. And I think it's very hard for people in that state, for whatever reason, to make as good of choices. But the spirit realm does say there's always people around us to help us. And if we ask for help, they always answer. You know, we may or may not listen to what they're answering. But if we will, like, for example, pause in terms of our thinking, our constant chatter internally, they will try to get a word in edgewise and make suggestions or give encouragement.
And hopefully everybody recognizes that that is a spirit guide that's doing that and not just your own self-consciousness doing that.
Well, I don't know if it's a bad thing. I mean, From a parapsychology viewpoint, it really doesn't matter what the source is, whether it's your unconscious mind or your a spirit. What matters is, or even a trickster spirit, what matters is what are they saying? Are they saying, or is it saying something useful to you?
Mm-hmm.
Is it saying something positive? If it's saying something positive and it's helpful, listen.
Yeah.
If it's saying something negative and it's not helpful, don't listen. So you don't get focused on the messenger. Focus on the message.
Well, very good advice there, too, Pamela. And speaking of that, you know, negative messages, in your book you talk about those who have passed on, who were at one time drug users or alcoholics. And you mentioned that they tend to obsess with others. And you gave an example of one that, was a drinker who would, find themselves in the local bar and finding one that is depressed and in low spirits. Did you say that they possess others who are depressed?
I don't think possess is perhaps the best term. I think they influence. And I think, again, to get back to the living, because I think it's important for us to recognize that there's not a big change between life and afterlife. If we hang out with people who are upbeat and cheerful, it's hard to stay sad around them. On the other hand, if you're feeling upbeat and you start hanging out around people who are really doom and gloom, it's hard to keep that positive attitude. I think energetically, when they will influence people. And in fact, I have had that happen where I was walking around and all of a sudden I felt incredibly sad. Only, you know, having a bit of experience as a medium, I'm like, wait a minute, this doesn't feel like this sadness belongs to me.
Right.
And I'll look around and there's a spirit there and it's not trying to hurt me. It's just incredibly sad and trying to figure out what's going on and it doesn't realize it's affecting me. And I think that kind of thing also affects a lot of people who don't know what's going on, and so they just think they're sad. You know, they don't realize that sadness isn't coming from within, or that craving for a drink isn't coming from within, or that craving for drugs isn't coming from within. Okay?
Well, we have a question from one of the listeners in the virtual auditorium.
Yeah.
We're going to let Kevin come up and ask a question to you.
Okay.
Kevin, go ahead.
Oh, thanks. I'd let go of that guilt, you know. I really, it's interesting, a number of spirits talk about the fact that they don't want to linger on life support. It just holds them back spiritually from moving forward, especially when they're uncomfortable. And I got to tell you, having your lungs filled up with water or blood or anything It's like you're constantly drowning. It's a very unpleasant feeling. I think what you did was the kind and honorable thing. You listened to the choice he made. You respected it. I think you would have a lot more regret in the afterlife when you look back on that if you had not honored his wishes.
Very, very good. Thank you so much, Pamela, and thank you, Kevin, for that question. Pamela, I know that you are an expert in psychokinesis.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit about your book, The PK Zone?
The PK Zone tries to look at everything basically that we understand today about the ability of the mind to influence matter. And the first third of the book is stories of it from around the world since the dawn of time. I mean, you're talking from ancient China and Rome and Greece on. People have been able to do this. It doesn't matter the culture. It doesn't matter the time. The middle third of the book looks at the experimental research. And there hasn't been a whole lot of it, but there is some stuff, probably over 100 years worth of formal research on how the mind can influence matter. And also looks a little at theories and a little bit about brain research. And then the last third of the book looks at what the experience is like for those of us who actually do mind over matter, whether it be firewalking or bending spoons or healing, which is probably my favorite to actually do. So it tries to sort of take the reader on a journey of understanding everything about this. And I wrote it not for everybody. It's kind of an academic-y kind of a book, and it really was written for a couple audiences mainly, those really interested in parapsychology, because there's a lot more, again, just like the channeled messages of suicide, there's a lot more information out there than people realize because nobody's gathered it together in one place before. But I also wrote it for people who actually do this stuff, whether it be poltergeist agents or others who have uncontrolled abilities, and they're trying to get a handle on what is this, how do I deal with this in a healthy way and integrate this into my life. And so I was trying to sort of make them understand that this is a perfectly normal ability, that everybody's got it, this is what we understand about it and how to deal with it, and, you know, these are sort of what your experiences mean and how you can sort of get better at controlling it. So it's a pretty big book.
I like the normalcy that you put on it. Angela, we only have a couple more minutes left on it, but I want to ask also, too, that our listeners, that they can reach you at www.pamelaheath.com. And you have a MySpace?
Yeah, I'm Pamela Heath on MySpace.
There you go, on MySpace. And anything new and up and coming for you that we can look forward to?
Two things. One is I'd like people to know that the suicide book is now available in Spanish.
Oh,
and it's done by Palmira Libros, which is a publisher in Spain. And the name of the book is Suicidio, que sucede realmente en el otro lado, un libro que puede salvar miles de vidas. Struggle to my Spanish there. I can't read all of it in Spanish, but I can get through most of it.
Okay.
And the other thing is I am working on a rewrite of the PK Zone, and the new name of the book is the book's getting a new title, so it's now going to be called Mind-Matter Interactions, the Stories, Research, and Theory.
Wow.
And also, too, you know, for those of you that we just gave out Pamela's website, go look at her paintings. She is absolutely awesome. And I have to say, I love your David Bowie ones that you've done.
Which one? The David Bowie?
The David Bowie.
I've done a couple of those, yeah.
Oh, I love David Bowie. But you have captured the, not only, I mean, it's so likable. I mean, it is David Bowie. And not only that, Kevin Costner. I can tell you like Kevin Costner.
Well, no, I enjoy portraits a lot, period. And what I discovered a long time ago is if you do portraits of celebrities, they sell well, and you don't have them sitting in your closet long term.
Well, I read that you're not selling your paintings. Did you change your mind? Or you still?
What I found, I did a lot of shows, and I actually was in galleries for a while. But what I found was when I was doing painting to sell it, I would stop painting what I wanted to paint, and I would paint what I knew I could sell, so I wouldn't be stuck with it sitting in my closets and taking up space. And I got to the point where I realized I didn't want to do that anymore. So now I paint more what I want to paint. Although you know, I'll occasionally sell a piece or give it away or, you know, do other things. But art has been a long-term love of mine. And the other thing is I'm also expanding the cartoon galleries, and there are people all over the world now who are borrowing cartoons with permission. I don't normally charge for it, but I do like to know where it's being used.
Well, Pamela, it's been a wonderful experience for all of us here at Portal, and I appreciate you coming on. Tuesday appreciates it as well. Please come back.
Oh, anytime. I love talking to you, and I hope that this book reaches the people who need it.
I believe it will. I've read it, and it's absolutely an extraordinary, very thorough book. And thank you for writing it, because we did need that information.
Yeah, I guess my concern is it's been such a taboo topic for so long that a lot of people kind of react to the title of the book without giving it a chance by actually reading it.
Well, I highly recommend your book.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, you know, it's not a pretty subject. It's something that is devastating to anybody who's ever gone through or knowing somebody that they lost through suicide. And if the fact is that, you know, Pamela, it's a success for even if you reached and helped one person that they decided not to go through suicide because they've read your book, that means to me it's an absolute success.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to take a village for you to help. It can take one person that makes this book completely worthwhile. And I hope that, you know, the fact is that we had said earlier, suicide is not the thing to do. Now that Pamela has written about it and has given you the information, knowingly that the pain does not go away when you reach the other side, that you second think the thought of committing suicide. There's just so much help out there for you.
Yeah, and you can always call 1-800-SUICIDE, you know, if you're in the United States. And I'm sure other countries also have their helplines.
Absolutely, on that one, on it too. And so on that note, on it, you know, I mean, Angela, you know, we didn't even get the chance to talk about that. She works with Lloyd. Now, how do you pronounce Lloyd?
Lloyd Auerbach.
Oh, gosh. You know, he's got that last name that you just, you know, you want to look at it and you think that, okay, Agabog.
Oh, wow. He's very well connected with the TV and film industry.
He is.
His dad did a major network sports channel show, and his uncle's head of the Directors Guild of America.
No, off the record here, though, was there a little bit of you know, you and Lloyd maybe dating?
Oh, no.
Okay.
No, Lloyd was married when I met him, and happily married. He has a delightful wife.
Okay. I didn't know that he was married. I've never heard him mention anything about his wife. He's married now?
Yeah, he's been married since I first met him, so since at least 1995.
1995?
Huh?
Okay. I've met him a couple times. In fact, I just emailed him not too long ago about a case that was of interest and some information that needs to be looked at. And he's so busy.
Yes, he is very busy. But we've been long-term friends, and we often work together under his organization, the...
is that my reader?
I'm blocking on it now. OPI, Office of Paranormal Investigation.
Yeah, under Mind Reader. He has it under Mind Reader, too, I believe it is on it.
Yeah, mindreader.com, and he's also got a new book coming out called Haunted by Chocolate.
Oh,
and
kidding.
He also has a book, which I would recommend to people, called A Paranormal Casebook.
Okay.
Which I'm actually in. He does talk about me some in that book.
Wonderful. Well, that's the end of our show here, Angela. This went so fast, and thank you so much, Pamela, for coming in. And speaking about your books and stuff on it, it was very interesting. And our virtual auditorium was nonstop about talking about it. So,
well, feel free to email me some of their questions, because I would be happy to answer them.
Okay, we will do that.
All right.
Thank you so much, Pamela.
All right, thank you.
Everybody take care, and we'll see you again next week. And this is Portal Paranormal Talk Radio, and I'm Tuesday Miles.
And I'm Angela Thomas.
And thanks for joining us. Bye-bye.
Bye.